The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the ESPN FC studios in today's edition of the show. I'm Sebastian Salazar. It's Friday. That means we got a lot to look forward to this weekend. Steve Nichol, Shaka Hislop going to be by to look ahead to some key fixtures in the Premier League. Ale Moreno will join us as well. Sunday, decision day in Major League Soccer as the regular season draws to a close. But let's start the show in the Bundesliga with the game of the weekend in the Bundesliga, maybe the game of the year in the Bundesliga, Der Klassiker, Borussia Dortmund, Bayern Munich. And as you can see, the recent history in this series is a one-sided tale. In fact, in their last three league meetings, Bayern 3-0, they've outscored Borussia Dortmund 10 goals to nothing. For more perspective, we welcome in Jan Agafjortov and Archie Rinn-Tutt to the show. Jan, I'll start with you. Why is it that Bayern in these games against a Dortmund side that's usually pretty good just seems to own Dortmund? And is there any sign to suggest that things might start to change this weekend?
Well, first of all, at the moment, Bayern is the best team in the world. So if you could call it the Klassiker, you could call it derby, you can call it a big game, they will probably win every game at the moment. And yes, there are some signals that they can do it. I think that there are some signs of Bayern getting a bit more tired, meaning that, for example, against Salzburg, they just explode in the 79th minute and not from the start, winning 6-2 in the Champions League. I was watching that game and I thought, what is going on there? I mean, I wanted to compliment Jesse March and Salzburg for doing a great game, and it was 6-2 at the end. And we know that Bayern, when they play, they're standing quite high. They are with a back four standing quite high, and with a Erling Haaland in form and some good players who can put him into position. I think there is some small hopes, at least, that Dortmund can be competitive. And for all of us loving German football, we will, of course, love to see Dortmund winning because we want to have excitement during the season, even though we are so highly impressed by the Bayern team.
Archie, Jan mentions Bayern Munich's inconsistencies. You were listening into the Borussia Dortmund press conference earlier today. Is there an air of confidence for this Dortmund side ahead of the matchup on Saturday?
I wouldn't say that Lucien Favre ever really gives off an air of confidence. He very much taps around with his words. He's not somebody for giving big, effusive statements, but he said that it's going to be touch and go regarding the fitness of Mats Hummels, who picked up a hamstring injury last weekend in Bielefeld, and Emre Can, who has just come out of his coronavirus quarantine. And I think that those positions hold the key to how this game is going to work out, because with Mats Hummels at the back, Dortmund have improved defensively a lot since he arrived back at the club. But also it's a question of, are they going to go with a back four? I think that all the tendencies are that they will. And the last time that Dortmund played a back four against Bayern, it didn't end up too pretty. In the game that they played in the Bundesliga in lockdown back earlier this year, they went with a back three, and I have to say it was one of the most hotly contested games I've seen during this period of time, and I thought that Dortmund did well to put up a good fight. I think Erling Haaland is the key player here. When he gets his chance, will he take it? He took one of them in the Super Cup against Bayern, but there was an excellent save that Neuer made in a one-on-one opportunity after that. And there was also a half chance. I think it's hard to say that he should have scored it in the first minute of the game in the Bundesliga that they played last season, that it didn't quite work out for him. So I'm intrigued to see how he prepares for this, because all signs point to him being a player for the big moment.
Jan, is Erling Haaland set up for a big match tomorrow, just given his speed, given the way Bayern Munich play? You mentioned the high line. Is this kind of an ideal matchup for him?
Well, at the moment, with the form he's got, it seems like every game is the perfect game for him, if that being Bruges away or whatever. I mean, what has impressed me of him this season, remember, People are talking about, will he leave the club? I mean, it's 10 and a half months since he started training with Dortmund. It's 1 year ago that he started his run in the Champions League. And I think what it shows that after that season he had last year and he came to Dortmund, remember that great game against Augsburg coming on, scoring a hat-trick, and still this season he looks like he's improved his game. I mean, we know about his ability to get space for himself. His timing of run, excellent. But I like the way he's developed also into a player that can keep the ball. He is also a team player. Sometimes you see goal getters, like myself 100 years ago, when I was one against a goalkeeper, I will never pass. I will never see my teammates being in better position. But Erling Haaland got that. And I think that we've seen that this season, that he has taken into another level, and he will love these kind of games because that's why he's in there. He loves his football, great attitude. For him to play Bayern, that is, I guess, for every Dortmund player at the moment, they should feel this challenger role. They should go for, they are playing against the best team in the world, and they're playing them home, and they got some of the biggest talents in the world. So, I mean, that is a great, great basic for a great game tomorrow.
Archie, from the outside, you look at Borussia Dortmund, we kind of I know not from the inside, but from the outside, we kind of judge them on how they stack up compared to Bayern Munich. If they do lose this weekend, let's say it's a heavy loss against Bayern Munich, would Lucien Favre be in any real pressure for his job?
I don't think it'll go that far. We've seen Lucien Favre throw the towel in before himself when things have been bad at previous clubs. When Borussia Mönchengladbach lost the first five games of the season back in 2015, Lucien Favre stepped down and Gladbach tried all they could to stop him from going. If he was to do something similar in Dortmund, albeit I think we're a long way from that right now, then I don't know whether Dortmund would put up the same kind of fight. His contract is up at the end of the season, and I would say that there's very lukewarm interest from Dortmund on renewing that. If you want to keep your coach, you're going to sign him up for another year. You're not going to let his contract run into that final year of the deal. So I think that Lucien Favre has done an okay to good job with Dortmund. We've seen before how with Peter Bosch and with Peter Stöger that this is not an easy job to find the right balance for. And Dortmund have consolidated their place as Germany's second power. But to take them on to the next stage, it feels like everything's a little too passive for Dortmund's liking. And even though they've kept four clean sheets in their last four games, they've not conceded at the Signal Iduna Park yet this season. The first time they've gone four games at home without conceding in 9 years. There's just something, it feels like there's lacking in terms of the amount of players that they have with quality going forward and the amount of entertainment that's providing.
Archie, other side of the managerial coin, of course, Hansi Flick. You were listening to his press conference earlier today as well. What are some of the big decisions he faces?
Well, for a start, Benjamin Pavard didn't train today and has not travelled to Dortmund, according to Bild over here. So that would mean that Bounassar will start at right back. He's done okay so far. I think he's made a good impression in the few games he's played. But the real decision that I think he's got to make is which of his wingers does he leave out? Will it be Serge Gnabry, Leroy Sané or Kingsley Coman? And I would say that given the noises he's made about Leroy Sané, I can see him opting for Kingsley Coman and Serge Gnabry. I think Leroy Sané is still finding his way into this Bayern side and still finding his way in pretty well. If you saw the goal he scored from distance against Eintracht Frankfurt the other week, you could hear the Eintracht Frankfurt goalkeeper Kevin Trapp saying he's going onto his left foot. He's going onto his left foot and still he slams it in from 20 yards. But I think that what with the way that Coman's performed in big games recently and also the same has to go for Gnabry, I think that will give them the edge in that respect.
Jan, what's your sense? If Bayern are able to win on Saturday, are we just headed for another ninth straight Bundesliga crown?
Well, everybody will tip that Bayern will win this league as well. But what I think is quite interesting this season is that RB Leipzig, maybe they will be up there somewhere. Gladbach could be up there somewhere. And Dortmund, of course, being the main challenger. The problem in Germany is that the hardest opposition, the Gegner, which I say in German, is Bayern himself. I mean, what can be the trouble at Bayern? Could be a coach who's not up for it or doing funny things that the big management and the Muppet show around them when they are bad could influence their game. But now with Hansi Flick, you seem that you have a personality, you have a former player, you have a good leader. I mean, everything he does, it seems so right. I mean, if he leaves one player out, he will come on. And Archie said, I mean, Sané came on and he thought Robin was back in business. I mean, it was exactly the same goal. So I think the only one who could stop Bayern this year as well is Bayern themselves. They played many games this season. It's intense. They have to find the right balance, how they use their player. Could the Alaba story with him not signing the contract be a big problem? I think that somehow they will find a solution there. You saw Boateng being out of been out of favor, and then he's playing well, so they probably sign him as well. So Bayern look good at the moment, and I think that what the other clubs got to learn from Bayern, because the other clubs can't hope that Bayern get worse. They have to improve themselves, because I think at the moment, and I've followed Bayern for many, many years, and I think now they're working very good on the field and outside the field, and they found somehow a balance there as well. But let's just hope that Dortmund tomorrow, I mean, remember, they lost against Hoffenheim 4-1. I mean, so there is still a hope that the best team in the world can lose a football game.
Archie, you're on the ground there in Germany. What's the sense that you're picking up? Do people have a feeling that if Dortmund doesn't get it done this weekend, that's it, done and dusted, Bayern going for number 9?
I think that even if Dortmund were to win this, you'd still pick Bayern as the favourite for the title simply because of how well Bayern perform against the rest of the division and how no one can really get near to them. As Jan says, Bayern are their own worst enemy, and cooking up the storms that they have in the media this week with David Alaba's contract situation, you saw how unhappy Hansi Flick was and stated that on the record as well. But ultimately, I don't think that Dortmund, with this young team that they have, there's a very famous quote, of course, in the English media from Alan Hansen way back in the day saying, you'll win nothing with kids. And I think that on the whole, there is something to that. I think that only big exceptions will overcome that. And you look at just how settled this Bayern team is right now. They can cope with a few players being out, and I don't think that Dortmund quite have the same depth or indeed the same ability to kill games early on, so that the way that Bayern, for example, were able to breeze past Bielefeld by just getting the game won in the first half, and then that they can go into second gear for the second half. I don't think that Dortmund have that same ability, and it's really difficult to see past anything but a Bayern title win this season.
Borussia Dortmund, Bayern Munich on Saturday should be a lot of fun. The Bundesliga weekend, though, getting started on Friday. Werder Bremen and Cologne. Gentlemen, we forced you to watch this game as part of your assignment. I would like to, on behalf of my bosses, apologize for that. Jan, this is a huge missed opportunity for Werder Bremen, though. Had they won, they could have jumped into the top four, sure, momentarily. A team that was in the relegation scrap a year ago. They're facing winless Cologne, and they were lucky to get a draw at the end.
I mean, Cologne must be so happy there is a Schalke in the Bundesliga, because their run is terrible and then Schalke is even worse. But I saw the game today. First half was terrible. There was no ideas. There was nothing happening. And then in the second half, it was a bit better. But as you said, Werder Bremen, they're 10 points now in 7 games. 4-1-1s in a row. So this decisive thing to win games is hard for them. I won't even start with Cologne, but I think that Werder Bremen at least tried and was a bit better in the second half. And it was so typical that Cologne needed their own goal to get into to the lead of the game. But it's true. I mean, I love to watch a football game. You have to find ways to see what's going on. And Cologne just look like sad at the moment. It's just like there's nothing there. And Gistola, 17 games now. Remember, they used that time. They won, Archie will know better than me, with 8 games of a fantastic run. And they saved themselves last season. But now the old traditional club don't have the home advantage with a great crowd as well. This could be a sad season for Cologne.
Archie, on the Werder Bremen front, I'm curious if you have any more context or insight into the decision not to let Josh Sargent go away with the U.S. men's national team. It seems like, at least from the U.S. perspective, a lot of the other players playing in the Bundesliga have been allowed to be a part of this call-up. Sargent being excluded seems odd.
So this is down to the local health authorities in Bremen, who have said that if players like Josh Sargent were to go away on international duty, then they would have to observe a 5-day quarantine upon coming back. Now that would impact Bremen, because it would mean that these players such as Josh Sargent would miss their game then against Bayern Munich on the 21st. And for Bremen, that is too much of a risk to take. And also, I think they're particularly keen to stop any players going. I mean, they're letting Yuri Pavlenka, their goalkeeper, go on international duty with the Czech Republic, but they're playing against Germany in Leipzig, so that's not as much as a problem. But I think you see the way that Hoffenheim, for example, have been impacted by losing Andrej Kramaric to a corona quarantine, and how Hoffenheim haven't won still since beating Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga. I think that as a smaller club, you can't afford to lose, and I mean smaller in terms of comparison to Bayern Munich and Dortmund, this is. You can't afford to lose your key players. You don't have the same strength in depth, for example. And I think that's why Werder Bremen, who already missing Davy Klaassen after he moved to Ajax, I think that's one of the reasons why we didn't see so much creativity from them in the game tonight and generally going forward. I think that they're extra keen, they're extra keen, yeah, let's go with that, to make sure that their big players don't go away on international duty.
Extra keen works for me. Look, Josh Sargent, let's get the striker's perspective. Jan, do you rate him? We saw him start today. Do you think he's good?
I tried to do my homework, so I sent a message to one of the main head of sport in the Bundesliga, and I said, try to describe Sargent for me, and it came back. Very talented player, working very hard, but he has to score more goals. And when you saw the game today, there was some stat after 80 minutes. He had touched the ball 17 times. And I mean, that is low for even for a striker. I didn't touch the ball a lot either, like 50 years ago. But there is a way. I like his touch. Good touch. Was some, a couple of times in the first time when we dropped a bit deeper and got more involved in the game. But somehow I kind of missed that that hunger, that passion to get that goal. I know he can score goals. We've seen some goals from him. A couple of chances in the second half, especially that cross when somehow he managed not to get a foot on that cross. I mean, there is something lacking of his hunger to score goals. And I think when you are a number nine, to score goals must be in there all the time. But he got the potential. He got the touch. Good movements. But I missed that last inch or whatever from him. I can't describe it more than I want to see someone who wants to go through the wall to score goals. I don't see that from him at the moment.
Jan, Archie, great stuff. Thanks as always for the perspective and the time. Some would say we're extra keen to see Der Klassiker on Saturday. There's the in for Borussia Dortmund, Bayern Munich. Gets underway 12 p.m. Eastern time. Our coverage starts on ESPN Plus. Going to be great. Dan in studio. He's going to have Jurgen Klinsmann along with him, Steve Cherundolo as well. And how about this? At halftime, a special interview with Alphonso Davies, of course, out injured, but will be joining us at halftime during our coverage of Der Klassiker.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Top half of the Premier League table looks like this after Friday's lone match between Southampton and Newcastle. Southampton 2-0 winners. And how about that? For the first time in 32 years, 1988, Southampton are on top of the top flight of English football. Right, that's the top half of the table. What about the bottom half of the table? That's where we find Manchester United. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's squad struggling. They've won just two of their first six league matches so far, entering the weekend in 15th place. So, is Ole starting to feel the heat? Well, here's what he had to say on Friday. Quote, if I don't trust my beliefs and values, my staff's quality and the quality of my players, who else should? I don't look at one or two results and fold like a house of cards. He also noted the extent to which Manchester United has been hard hit by the COVID-19 pandemic. For more perspective, we welcome into the show Shaka Hislop, Ale Moreno, and Stevie Nichols. Stevie, you're the former manager. What do you make of what Ole is saying here? Certainly seems defiant.
Defiant or looking for an excuse? How can you come out and say the pandemic has affected your players badly? I mean, is there nobody else involved in this? Is it just Manchester United? Every team's been hit by it, badly or otherwise. That's no sort of excuse. And I'd have to say, at Man United right now, who's actually in charge? Mm. I mean, because the performance during the week, and particularly that first goal, tells you that on the field, nobody's in charge. And clearly, off the field, nobody's in charge either. Because the way the players are performing, nobody's putting them straight. Nobody's in the face. Nobody's telling them what to do. Nobody looks as though they've got a particular job. So, listen, if Ollie thinks throwing in the pandemic is going to get any sympathy from anybody, I think you better think again.
Shaka, we discussed this on yesterday's show. Let's leave the question of will Ole go should they lose to Everton on the weekend aside, because it seems like the board is quite content to stick with him. But if you were in charge, Shaka, if they were to lose to Everton this weekend with the Champions League group still very much in play, would you get rid of Ole, or does he deserve more time?
Well, I'm biased in this, and I think Ole's been out of his depth for quite some time. But every time you think that, you know, the hammer's about to fall, they pull a result out of the bag. You know, think back to PSG a couple of seasons ago, PSG earlier this season, RB Leipzig earlier this season. But whenever you get those results, and Ole seems to be on firmer ground, Manchester United just seem to go to pot, and that's what we've been seeing. I think if Manchester United lose, and not narrowly, I'm going to go 3-0 this weekend. I don't think the Manchester United board has any choice but to part with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Despite the odd result, as I just mentioned, there is nothing about Manchester United that suggests that they're trending in the right direction. They got a kick with Bruno Fernandes signing in January, but it hasn't carried on this season. Nothing of note, in their summer transfer signings in Van der Beek. He can't even get into the starting 11. I'm not sure that Ole even knows who his best starting 11 is. I'm losing, if I'm part of that Manchester United board, I'm losing confidence by the minute.
Ale, it's a discussion topic that's frequent on this show, but down to the point of whether it's Ole or the players, go through the United 11, go through their whole 18 if you want. Tell me who are the guys that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer can really count on in this group, outside of Bruno Fernandes, who, if we're honest, hasn't been the player this season that he was last.
Right, so you can point at the players and then you can say, yes, it's underperforming all over the place. You expect more from Paul Pogba, but I think we've gone down this path with Paul Pogba now for seemingly, I don't know, 2-3 years, whatever it may be. It didn't quite work out with Jose Mourinho. It's not working with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So obviously, the Paul Pogba experience is not quite working in Manchester United, and it doesn't seem like it's going to work anytime soon. And so that is one player that, if he's not performing at the highest level possible, it's a big hole that you have to cover for. And then in the case of, say, Anthony Martial, you get excited about Martial because he comes in, he scores a couple of goals, and it's like, oh, this is the moment. The maturity of the player, we're seeing it come through. He's growing. He's now going to be the goal scorer for Manchester United. And then either he gets injured, or then he stops scoring, or creativity for Manchester United is an issue. And we go backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. And I think that's the story for Manchester United as a whole, but certainly for the players involved. The case of David De Gea, last year, a real struggle. The year before, trending towards a struggle. This year, better. And that in itself is Manchester United, is a a little bit better, a little bit worse, a little bit better, a little bit worse. And it goes from every single line in this team, from the back to front. In the end, what you have is inconsistency. And so therefore, you see inconsistent performances individually and as a group. And that's on the players, yes. But that's also on the coach. And it is his responsibility to make sure that he can get the very best out of these players. We said that about Jose Mourinho at the time, and it's fair to say about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at the time. It is now time for Manchester United and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to sort out, okay, this is my team, this is my starting 11, this is how we want to play, this is our identity. We're a couple of years down the road, and we still don't have an answer on any of those.
Stevie, since Ale mentioned Paul Pogba, is this a match for Paul Pogba to start? Is he in that 11 for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
Well, how long's he been there? 4 years? When's he going to start? Are we going to decide that? Well, this could be the game. How many times have we said it? Ali said it. We've been down this road for forever and a day. And the only thing that's ever happened is he's let us down again and certainly let his team down. So, I mean...
You wouldn't even have him in the starting lineup?
Absolutely not. Listen, the best performances Manchester United have had this season have been when Paul Pogba has been fit but hasn't played. He's had Fred and McTominay sitting doing all the defensive work, and he's had Fernandes roaming around. That means there's no place for Paul Pogba. So, no, you don't play him. He shouldn't be playing.
Shaka, there's this weird thing with United against good teams, teams that have the ball, they seem to get good results. Against bad teams, teams where they're forced to have the ball, they don't get those results. Where does Everton fit there?
I think Everton come in Manchester United. Listen, Everton themselves are on the middle of a bad run, two losses since that draw with Liverpool. But they're welcome back Richarlison and James Rodriguez. And I think if you're Ancelotti, you're asking this Everton, despite the run that they're in, to go back to who they were early in the season, getting James Rodriguez on the ball, getting that partnership between Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin up front working again, and taking this game to Manchester United, because this is a United team that is lacking in confidence, as we keep seeing and keep pointing out. And I feel that if you play on the front foot, there is enough uncertainty about Manchester United defensively that you can get at them. You don't have to sit and wait for those opportunities to present themselves, even though they often do. I think you can get at Manchester United. And then that also works in your favour in establishing who you are, regaining that confidence that you saw earlier in this season. If I'm Everton, I'm having a go at them. I feel you can get the job done that way.
Ale, huge opportunity here for Everton. As Shaka notes, they've had a couple games where they've lost back-to-back, but they now get James back, didn't have him over the weekend against Newcastle. This is a litmus test for Ancelotti's side, isn't it?
Of course it is. And I think the most concerning part about Everton and their last couple of losses against Southampton and Newcastle, Southampton in particular, is that they got beat up physically through the midfield. So when Everton was doing very well in the beginning of the year, everybody was talking about Allen and Sigurdsson and Doucouré and how they work so well together. Well, through the midfield, they got destroyed against Southampton. It wasn't much better against Newcastle. And so you have to find, if you're Everton, some physicality, some toughness through that midfield and establish yourself against what it tends to be a fragile mentally team in Manchester United. So test Manchester United physically, compete, 50-50 challenges, win some of those balls, win second balls, establish yourself as a superior team, and then you can allow James Rodriguez to play. But if you don't win that through the midfield, then you're going to have some difficulties. I look at Everton, and it's a team that is teetering. Yeah? Do they stay in touch with that dream of maybe the top four and really contending and being this team that is a sexy pick for people to kind of say, yeah, look at Ancelotti and look at the new players and how they're coming in and everything is great? Or are they going to trend in the opposite direction and it's kind of play to what we expect Everton to be? And it's more of like, maybe in the top six, more like a mid-table sort of team. I think they're better than that. They showed that earlier in the season, but this game would be very important in making sure that they stay in contact with the top. By the way, I don't think Richarlison is back. Richarlison, I think it's...
One more game suspended, yeah.
This is his third game of his suspension, so I'm not sure that he's back for this game.
Yeah, Seamus Coleman and Lucas Digne back, James. as well. So Everton, certainly they're getting a boost. Shaka, one of the areas of inconsistency for Everton is in net. Jordan Pickford, benched last week, guaranteed a start this week. What do you make of how Ancelotti's handling this?
Oddly. It's weird. And I don't think it serves either goalkeeper that well, be either Olsen or Pickford. I've long felt that managers need to establish who their number one is and let that player go out and play their game, their natural game, without that kind of a threat. Now, if you have concerns around Pickford, then you go with Olsen and say he's my number one for the foreseeable future. But this kind of chopping and changing, and I'm going to give you a rest this week and you'll be back next week, I don't think it serves Pickford any good. Maybe it's a benefit to Olsen, given the fact that he hadn't been playing, so he gets some good minutes, league minutes, under his belt. But otherwise, I feel long term, it's more damaging to Pickford than doing any good.
Stevie, manager's perspective Shaka. Here.
No, hold on a second. Shaka, don't you think there's a bit of psychology going on here? Because, you know, the fact that he says to Pickford, look, you're definitely playing next week, but you don't want to be playing today. You know, all that's going to do is he's telling Pickford he's playing next week in the big game, but he's making him think. It's a quiet little kick up the backside just to get him on his toes. Without actually just cutting his legs off and not playing them. I think it's a smart move. I think it's a really smart move. It's absolutely a coach doing a psychological job on somebody who he just wants to remind that, you know, you need to get back to your best.
Let me add to what I just said, and that kind of hinges on the private conversation that goes on between Ancelotti and Pickford. That is not about the media, it's not about what Ancelotti says to, you know, pre or post game or whatever it may be. But if that private conversation never happened, if he didn't have a sit down with Pickford and have that discussion before, and they both come to that understanding and both acknowledge that's what's going to happen, and there's not a whole lot more to read into it, then I just think that it's a problem that will continue cropping up and will affect Pickford poorly. As we sit right now, I don't know if Ancelotti and Pickford had a separate conversation. As far as I am aware, all we know about it is what Ancelotti said to the press. And I don't think it works, Stevie.
Can I just say, Stevie just mentioned that this is a way of getting Pickford on his toes. From my perspective, and I'm no goalkeeper, but this is merely an observation of Jordan Pickford from the outside looking in. The last thing that Jordan Pickford needs is to get on his toes. What he needs to do is calm down. Calm down. Stop with the jumpy sort of behavior
and this high energy. You need medication to calm him down.
Because if you're a center back for Everton or anybody playing in the back line for Everton, you look at Jordan Pickford in the back line behind you, you go, man, this guy's all over the place. I have no sense of security that this guy is going to do the job because he is liable to make some sort of mistake because he's too excited. He's got to calm down, man. Really calm down and play the position and make the saves that he needs to make and then provide that sense of safety and security that you need to have if you are a defending player for Everton.
Everton, Manchester United then on Saturday. Let's push forward to Sunday. Liverpool visiting Manchester City. Pep Guardiola with some interesting and very current event-related comments on Friday. Asked just how big a game this is. It's an important game, but like the presidential elections in the USA, all the votes must be counted. A lot of points to play for. So it sounds like this isn't a title decider just yet in Pep's mind. Stevie, what do you make of the comments? Downplaying, just for downplaying's sake?
I don't think for downplaying's sake. I think actually what he's saying is correct. At the same time, both managers, not just Pep, will know that this is a big game. Absolutely no question. It is early in the season, which means that you know, in 4 months' time, we would have completely forgot about this game. But no, don't kid yourself. They know how big it is. So he is downplaying it, but inside he knows how big this is.
Ale, what's up with Pep's Manchester City? They got just 9 goals so far this season. There are 11 teams in the Premier League that have outscored them, including Brighton. This is not the Pep's football we know.
Well, what we have is a lot of possession, a lot of horizontal movement, a lot of nice, tidy passing going on in the middle third. But once they got to that final third, what we have from Manchester City is they're either not creating enough, but when they do create, they do not take advantage of the opportunities. It's also almost as if they want to pass the ball into the net and just kind of walk it into the net. And they don't quite have the players in order to do that. At some point, Manchester City is going to have to demand from Raheem Sterling, hey, you got to score goals. You got to be the guy because we don't have any other players that can do this. Sergio Aguero, up and down, injured, not available, available. And then you get excited. This is where Manchester City is right now. Getting excited for the return of Gabriel Jesus, as he did against Olympiacos, and scores a goal and say, ah, that's it. We got all the answers. Gabriel Jesus is here. Where for years we have said, man, Gabriel Jesus is a nice piece to have, but he can't be the guy. Well, right now, by process of elimination, he seems to be the hope for them to be scoring goals. They create some chances, not enough. And of those chances that they do create, they're not taking advantage of. And so therefore, we find a team that is scrambling to find goals. I think they build some momentum against Olympiacos. We'll see if they can carry that on against Liverpool.
Agüero not available on the weekend, but looks like he should be back after the international break. Shaka, sometimes when you hear about, and I don't want to focus just on the manager, but the project. You hear about project going stale. When you watch Manchester City play, is that what you see, or is this just a blip?
Listen, I don't think City are the team that they were even of last season, and that clearly is a concern. And then just given Pep Guardiola's own history with football clubs and that 3-year turnover and now exceeding that, admittedly, but you just wonder if that is the case. I think the challenge for City, and Ali's right in pointing out that they haven't been able to call on a striker consistently. Aguero, because of his injuries, and Gabriel Jesus just hasn't been the deputy to Aguero that maybe you thought he was when he first joined. And now it's great when you can have goal scorers like Mahrez and Sterling and Silva and whoever else you want to call on. But your midfielder scoring goals is supposed to be the icing on the cake. They aren't supposed to be the ones carrying the load. And I think that's what you're seeing with City. So whereas in Champions League football, they're scoring pretty freely. In league football, they haven't beaten anybody by more than a single goal, I believe, or only one game by more than a single goal. Similar criticism to Liverpool, mind you. But that's my concern. I just feel that if you're relying on your midfielders, if you continue to rely on these late runs and runs coming from deep, eventually that's going to catch up with you. It's good enough for a moment, but eventually that's going to catch up with you. And that, for me, is where maybe City are getting found out, less so than maybe their style or anything going stale, to your question, Seb.
Stevie, from a Liverpool perspective, is there anything in this City team that worries you?
Yes, they're due to give somebody in the Premier League a pasting. You know, the chances they've created and missed in the last, what, 3 or 4 Premier League games is just un-City-like, to be quite frank. And eventually, they're going to blow that door wide open. So that would be my only fear playing against City. Clearly, Liverpool's problems are at centre-back, and that's, again, adds to why I'm scared, because City are due to score some goals and some big bunches. And so what Liverpool's going out defensively is the only thing that really I'm concerned about.
Stevie, on yesterday's show, we got into a little bit the Jota-Firmino debate. Klopp has come out and basically had to defend Firmino today as he keeps getting asked about it. Look, Firmino's got 1 goal in 10 games so far this season. Jota is clearly the hot hand. Why not, for this game only, why not just go with Jota, the hot guy?
Well, coaching's not about just game to game. You know, you're trying to look after a culture and a squad, and you have to be loyal as well without going overboard.
Don't you do that by starting the best player?
Well, it's not that clear. Now, listen, if Firmino is having an absolute stinker and not contributing while not scoring goals, then that's a different ball game. But actually, he's doing everything except put the ball in the back of the net. And he's built up enough over the last two or three seasons that he is the centre forward. And so, yes, Jota is so close. It's so close. I said it last week, it was that close between Jota and Firmino. But still, what Firmino brings to the game just outdoes Jota right now. And as I said, I thought Klopp was great. Klopp said, I don't want to embarrass Firmino by telling you how great and how all the fantastic things he does for the team. I think that says it all.
Gentlemen, great stuff. This trio back with us for today's edition of Extra Time. Xhaka talks about a brutal challenge, Ale on Barcelona, and Stevie on his bookshelf.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Exciting weekend coming up in Serie A, but first let's take a look at the top half of the table. Sassuolo, man, they had a chance to jump AC Milan, be top of the table, and they didn't come through. A 0-0 draw against Udinese. For a little bit more perspective on it, we welcome in Nicky Bandini to the show. My question, it was written here, Sassuolo's going to win. Are they for real? I guess we got our answer.
Yeah, you weren't the only one expecting that. Udinese are in the relegation zone. Sassuolo have been playing great football, beat Napoli. It just didn't happen for them tonight. They had a huge amount of possession. They tried to play their normal game, but Udinese came and parked the bus. And all of those players who we've really sort of enjoyed watching in this first part of the season, Ciccio Caputo, Domenico Berardi, and Maurice Jeremy Boga, they just couldn't find a way through. I think it was the first game all season in Serie A in which neither goalkeeper made a single save. So I've got to tell you, Sebi, it wasn't much of a spectacle.
Yeah, I was looking at the statistics, just the one shot on goal between the two teams. Incredible. All right, so let's move on to a match that we hope will be a little bit more entertaining. Lazio-Juventus on Sunday. Lazio clearly not the team that they were last year. I guess you could probably say the same about Juventus. So at least early on, just 3 wins from their first 6 league matches of the season. What do we expect on Sunday then?
Well, I think that the Juventus conversation has changed a lot just for the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo is back now from his COVID interruption. The last 2 games, well, 1.5 games really since he came back, they've won 4-1 now. That was against Spezia, it was against Ferencváros. These aren't teams that you necessarily expected to trouble Juventus, but I think it perhaps indicates still how important he is to this team. That's not a huge surprise, but obviously part of the hope in appointing Andrea Pirlo was that we would start to see a more dynamic and creative football from Juventus. And I don't personally think we've really seen that yet. What is encouraging is in the last game and a half, he's looked pretty comfortable playing alongside Alvaro Morata. So I think one of the big things I'm looking for on the Juventus side is how that combination continues to develop.
Yeah, Nikki, as far as Lazio is concerned, what's going on with this team? They were in a full team quarantine, and now there's some discussion that maybe the way they were following protocols and specifically communicating who had COVID-19 and who didn't might be under question. Are they going to get in trouble either by Italian authorities or perhaps from Serie A?
This is a really huge story, and the honest answer to your question is I don't know yet. Sort of try and summarize it quickly. I think it was the 26th of October before their game against Club Brugge. Lazio had several players test positive, including Ciro Immobile, who couldn't travel for the game. I think they took a squad of about 13 players, first team squad players for that game. So it was a really, really sort of major outbreak they were dealing with. Then they played Torino in midweek, and Ciro Immobile is there. And the response from the club is, well, he was tested before that European game, and he was positive, and he'd be tested midweek, and that's following the Serie A protocol, and so he was available for the Torino game. He scores, and Lazio wins. But then, before they go back to the Champions League game, for the game against Zenit, Immobile tests positive again. And so now you have this very odd situation where he's tested positive sort of twice in a week, but managed to play a game in the middle of it against Torino. And the full picture about exactly how this happened is still it's very much under investigation by the Italian football authorities, but it's also under investigation by the Italian authorities, because, of course, COVID protocols are a big deal right now, nationally and internationally. And if he was traveling to Turin, which is an away game, when he should have been quarantining, he's broken the law. The question of how this happened is really complex. It seems like, from Lazio's position, what they think has happened is UEFA's tests have thrown up one result, and their own tests, their in-house testing. Actually, I should rephrase that. It wasn't in-house. They go to a clinic, but the clinic testing they had gave a negative result, and so they thought Immobile was clear to play. There's questions there about whether the testing protocols are different. There's also a question that's emerged about whether or not Lazio informed the correct health authorities in Rome about the negative test. So there's layers and layers to this story that, honestly, we could do a whole show on. But the fact is that, basically, it's still under investigation. And it's under investigation, potentially, at several different levels.
Elsewhere on Sunday, we've got Atalanta and Inter. I was looking at this one, and I'm trying to think who's the favorite. And it's not really clear to me. So who is the favorite in this match?
Yeah, that's a good question. Two teams who are sort of both kind of underperforming at this point. Inter certainly coming off a couple of really frustrating results, drawing with Parma, and then obviously the loss to Real Madrid in the Champions League. But Atalanta have had an odd season. You know, they've won 4 out of 6 games in the league. They're not in a bad position in the table at all, but they've had a couple of real shellackings almost. They're getting walloped by Napoli, getting the 5-0 defeat to Liverpool in the Champions League, where they really just didn't look at the races really at all. They are missing some big players at the moment. I think Martin Deroon's going to be out this weekend, Robin Gosens, and also Hans Hatterber. So some significant possible absences, and things just look a little bit disjointed. But Inter likewise, Romelu Lukaku, is he going to be there? It looks touch and go at the moment. So without him, they've had problems. They're also, I mean, actually the bigger problem with Inter, to be frank, everyone's talking about Lukaku being out and how his goals are so critical. They've conceded 10 times already this season in Serie A in 6 games. Last season, they had the tightest defence in the whole league. So they've got problems at both ends of the pitch, Inter. I really don't know who I see as the favourite here, but probably Inter need to win more.
Should be a good match. Nikki, thanks so much. Plenty more from Nikki on the latest edition of the Serie A Awesome podcast, dropped on Wednesday. The crew is joined by none other than Stuart Robson. And of course, once you're done listening to the podcast, you will be ready for all of this. A full slate of Serie A action this weekend. A reminder, of course, you can watch it all on ESPN+, with the one exception of the aforementioned Lazio-Juventus match, that an early start time Sunday morning in a game you can see on ESPN. To Sunday afternoon, we'll have studio coverage starting at 2 p.m. Eastern time as league leaders AC Milan host Hellas Verona.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
It all comes down to Sunday. Well, not all of it, but a lot of it when it comes to the regular season. It's MLS Decision Day. The Eastern Conference gets going at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. All the games there on ESPN+, with the notable exception of Philly and New England. They'll play on ABC. Then the Western Conference gets things going at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. 26 teams in MLS. 18 will make the postseason. But it's Decision Day, so there's still some things to whittle down. For more, we're welcoming back Ale Moreno. All right, Ale, let's start with the Supporter Shield, which was not going to exist and is now going to exist. It's going to come down to Philly and Toronto. They're not playing each other, but they're playing at the same time. Who do you think comes away with the 2020 Supporter Shield?
I think Philadelphia comes through, and they're able to beat the New England Revolution at home and obtain their first trophy in franchise history. And of course, then we get into the conversation as to what the Supporter Shield is, particularly this year. And because we don't want to go down that path and have that talk, we'll just say that it's a tremendous achievement for the Philadelphia Union, given the very challenging circumstances that they and the rest of the teams in MLS have had to go through this year. But I do think it's exciting times right now for the Philadelphia Union, for the Philadelphia Union fans. And they have a real opportunity at home to achieve something that they haven't achieved before. And not only is it the Supporter Shield, but of course, the number one seed in the Eastern Conference and all that that does for you in setting the path for success in the playoffs.
I think it's a fair question to ask, right? Like, what is the Supporter Shield? Maybe not this year, but let's just go back to like when you were a player. Did you guys care about it?
We care about it for a sense of pride, I suppose. But that was it. I honestly think... teams that I was part of, we won maybe three or four times the Supporter Shield. And the fact that I have to kind of question myself after we won it three or four times, it tells you and gives you an idea of how somewhat insignificant it was. I mean, it's important in terms of what it does for the playoff currently, but even back then, you were focused on winning MLS Cup. That's the trophy that you want to raise. If you were to sacrifice a trophy one for the other, you wouldn't say, you know what, we'll skip MLS Cup, give us a Supporter Shield. No, you wouldn't want to have to sacrifice MLS Cup for anything. That's the main goal. The Supporter Shield is important and has some value, but clearly the big topic of conversation and the big trophy and the one that you want to be lifting is MLS Cup. I've been on the other end, on the end of teams that have been dominant through the regular season, and for whatever reason, an injury or a suspension or a bad game, a bad afternoon, and then you end up coming out of the playoffs and being eliminated and not being able to defend what you did in the regular season. And that doesn't give you any sort of moral victory whatsoever. Oh, but we won the Supporter Shield. That didn't do much for me as a player, and I don't think it did much for us as a team.
We got Philly and Toronto battling it out then for the Supporter Shield on top of the Eastern Conference. Western Conference is a three-horse race. You got Sporting Kansas City, Portland, and Seattle. Because of the COVID-19 postponements, this is all going to come down to points per game. I'll go through the individual matchups. Sporting Kansas City gets RSL, who have already been eliminated. If you're Portland, you got LAFC. Seattle, meanwhile, has a San Jose team that you just never know what you're going to get. When it's all said and done on Sunday night, who do you think will win the West?
Sporting Kansas City, I think it remains the way it is. They go to Real Salt Lake and play against an RSL team that really have nothing to play for. So that could work out one or two ways. Either they have a freedom to play and express themselves and all that nonsense that people like to talk about, or you go back to what you have been really most of the season. It's just a team that has all sorts of difficulties putting any sort of consistency together. I don't see Real Salt Lake truly challenging Sporting Kansas City. They may try to play a spoiler role, but in the end, I think Sporting Kansas City is too good. And so therefore, whatever Portland does doesn't really matter. Whatever Seattle does doesn't really matter, because as long as Sporting Kansas City beats RSL, then they're going to be the number one seed in the Western Conference.
We're talking about the top of the standings a lot in this segment, but it is the MLS playoffs, so somehow the bottom of the standings also matter, especially in the Eastern Conference, where you're going to have 10 teams make the playoffs. There are two spots left, as of yet unclinched. There are five teams that could still take those two spots. One of them, my beloved and, I will admit, terrible DC United. Ale, please, please tell me, is DC United going to pull through? Are they going to be in the postseason?
Well, in some ways, they have it in their hands to a degree, because mm-hmm. they are playing against the Montreal Impact, who is
the team that they're chasing after. Montreal and Chicago right now are in, and DC United is on the outside looking in. And so if you're DC United, you wouldn't want it any other way than actually play against a team that you're competing in terms of the points and the standings. The problem is that DC United, not only do they need to beat Montreal, but they also need some help. And, man, I know they're on a three-game winning streak, and I know you feel confident about DC United, and maybe there's momentum here. I just have to believe that the body of work throughout the regular season has some sort of value, and that if you've been terrible for the most part of this season, however difficult it has been for everybody, at some point that has to show itself in the standings. And I would hope that the teams that have done enough up until this point to be in the playoffs, that in the end they're able to see themselves into the playoffs. It is difficult for me to see that DC United has a real chance. It is difficult to see Inter Miami having a real opportunity. Atlanta, with all their struggles, they still have a chance. They need some help. All of those teams do need some help. And I would say, of all those teams that are on the outside looking in, Inter Miami seems to be the one that makes the most sense because of who they play against. Mm. They play against Cincinnati. And so they beat Cincinnati, and then they hold the tiebreakers against both Montreal and Chicago. And so if that's the case, then Inter Miami seems to have the inside track as to being the one team that from those that are on the outside looking in that will be able to sneak into the playoffs.
A playoff field featuring 18 teams should be a lot of fun. Decision day on Sunday. Ale, thanks for the time. All right, then, that's all the time we've got for today's edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to Jan, Archie, and Nikki for joining us. As for Stevie, Shaka, and Ale, they're not done yet. Extra time starts now. Greetings and welcome into a Friday edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. I'm Sebastian Salazar. That chuckle that you hear in the background is Steve Nichol. The head wag
is it?
Very recognizable, Ale Moreno.
Greetings.
Shaka's smiling. Is that what they say around the holidays? Greetings?
Come on. Seth, honestly, either you're going to put in a full effort or you're not. So greetings is not good enough.
All right, camera on me. Hey there, everybody. Yeah. Welcome into ESPN FC's Extra Time. We got your questions hot off of Twitter. The boys are excited, except for Stevie, who's lukewarm about my presence most days, let's
just
be honest.
Being stupid.
Well, that's not different from the usual. First question of the day. It won't go to Shaka because she's still laughing. Did the crew ever find it difficult to motivate themselves in the games that they were expected to win? Stevie, I feel like you were probably expected to win a lot of the games you played in. Do you ever find motivation difficult?
Not really, no. No, because, you know, when you're playing for the side that is expected to win every time they step on the field, it becomes not about the opposition. It's about, you know, just repeating every single thing that you do week in, week out, getting yourself ready for a game. So it's never about the opposition. It's about what you're expected to do and how to get yourself prepared to do it. So, no, we never looked at any team and went, well, no, how am I going to, I can't be bothered for this game. No, that wasn't the case. You didn't have a choice. You had to be ready.
Mm. Next question, a Barcelona question from Arps. Ale, do you think Sergio Busquets should still be a regular starter ahead of Miralem Pjanic?
No. And it's been a long time coming. And certainly over the last year and a half or so, Sergio Busquets, you see physically that he's struggling to get around the field. Now, with the ball at his feet and the possession and the decision-making, that's still there. But he can't quite get to the spots that he once did. And Barcelona right now are not good enough to control the game with the possession the way that they did and at their very best. And so now you need a little bit more athleticism to cover some spaces defensively and more athleticism to get forward and support in the attack, because the game has changed around Barcelona. And because the possession is not nearly as good, it demands for something different through the midfield. So therefore, Sergio Busquets is coming to an end in terms of the days of him starting for this team.
Barcelona playing on Saturday. So does Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund in the Clásico. You can catch it, by the way, on ESPN Plus in the United States. Stevie asks, speaking of Bayern Munich, Stevie, would David Alaba be the perfect defender for Liverpool to sign to add more depth to the squad? Based on what you think, he'd probably walk into the 11, yeah?
Yes, I think so. You know, it seems a little harsh on Gomez, who at times has been excellent, been really, really good, but at other times has fallen a little bit short. You know, I said at the end of last season when they won the Premier League, if I had a wish list, it would be to sign a top-class defender to play next to Virgil van Dijk. And so Alaba, no question, falls into that category. As I said, it seems a little harsh on Gomez because he has been good. But the wish list would be, yes, somebody like Alaba.
Next question harkens back a little bit to a couple weeks ago, the Virgil van Dijk, Jordan Pickford incident. To Shaka, Ala, and Stevie, have you ever injured somebody that was sat on the sideline for many weeks, months, that you regret tackling? Ala, you first.
No, I was nowhere near defending, so therefore the probabilities were very short for me. I don't remember injuring anybody that meant that they were out for even a game. I don't recall having done that, no.
Shaka, I feel like as a goalie, you probably had your fair share of run-ins.
Yeah, one in particular comes to mind. Casiraghi, the Italian, joined Chelsea. And we collided, took his knee out basically, and he had to pack in. Let me just be clear. I don't think I did anything wrong, so I don't have any regrets in that regard. But just the way it happened, and obviously the outcome, I wish it turned out some other way. What happened was, I think it was Ferrer had the ball on the right, whipped a low cross in, and I came for the low cross. Casiraghi saw me coming and tried to stick his leg out and nick the ball in front of me. But then his studs got caught in the turf, and I was, I'm coming flying out, and it took his knee out. He had to have an operation the next day and never recovered. And that is, again, it wasn't a foul. It wasn't something I did intentionally, but I just wish there was a different outcome.
I tell you what I heard there, Seb. Shaka was late. That's what I just heard. Shaka was late to the challenge.
No, was early. I was early. Casiraghi was late.
Mm. No. That's he got there happened. To the ball first. He took his legs out. You were late, Shaka.
No, he didn't know that. Hola, the ball didn't get there. Huh? Rio Ferdinand cleared the ball. But I was getting there first. And he tried to nick it ahead of me. And yeah, the ball never even got there, which was even worse.
So you hit somebody without the ball, Shaq. Penalty.
Mm-hmm. Stevie, I think this came up a couple weeks ago, and I don't remember you having anything that you regretted. Anything come to mind now?
No. Similar to Shaka, I made a tackle in an international game, Scotland against Norway, in Norway. In the middle of the park, same as Shaka. I didn't do anything wrong, just a strong challenge, two players coming together. And then the following summer, I was doing a camp, a little coaching camp in Norway, in Oslo. And the guy came to see me, and he never kicked a ball again after that. He actually couldn't play after that. He did something to his knee, which meant he had to retire. I actually met the guy, and he said, "Listen, it was just one of those things. I didn't do anything wrong." But so, similar to Shaq, I would rather have stayed away, and the guy hadn't got injured and had to have retired. But as I said, I didn't do anything wrong. Just unfortunately, it's one of those things that happens in football.
Seb, I actually just remember. We were playing against Ecuador World Cup qualifier at home for Venezuela. And one of the instructions that I was given prior to the game was to chase around their center back, who was their leader, Captain Iván Hurtado. So he was sort of their reference point in the back line, and get the ball so that he would play the ball either into wider areas, get the ball off his feet, because he would be, again, the guy that would play out of the back. And, make it physical, challenge him and all these things. It wasn't my intention, but in a 50-50 challenge, he slipped, and I happened to be there, and the guy gets injured, walks off the field. The moral of the story here, and the real point of the story, is that in this case, I did not regret it, because in him going out, they brought somebody else who couldn't play the position as well as he did, and we won the game 3-1. Hey,
hey. There you go. By any means necessary. Ale, can you see Atletico Madrid challenging for the title against Real Madrid, seeing as Barca have looked terrible? Asked Pablo.
Yes, Atletico Madrid is very much a challenger in this title race in La Liga, and they should be, given the fact that not only Barcelona, but Real Madrid have had their difficulties as well. And in watching and observing both Barcelona and Real Madrid, what I would say is that they're both vulnerable. We know Barcelona are, and Real Madrid have shown that they can be vulnerable as well. So if you're Atletico Madrid, just go on a long run of consistent play. Find an identity, push that identity through, and you will have a real opportunity to win in this title.
Stevie, deep history dive here. Who, in your opinion, are the best defensive fullbacks of all time?
Ooh. Maldini's got to be in there.
I'm in.
Throw one in.
Depends how far back you're going to go. A guy called Danny McGrain for Celtic was fantastic in the 70s.
Well, that's far back. That's far back, yes.
Well, listen, here's the problem, right?
Back then.
I could probably name you 20 or 25. You probably wouldn't know the majority of them. But their only job when they played was to defend. And they defended, and nobody got past. So there's not one or two that pops to your mind
when I say the best defensive fullback of all time. There's not one or two that's the first to flood your head.
Oh, I mean, well, I'm going to try and think of, so who was the 82 Brazilian left back?
Ale, you were born, I wasn't.
Junior.
No, Junior. No, Junior played in the middle.
Junior. No, Junior played fullback as well, didn't he? Because he'd get forward all the time, but even back then, he defended. He could actually, he was one of the only ones that could defend. So somebody like him, if you're looking for guys. Sorry?
He wasn't a left back. You said who was the left back. He wasn't the left back for that 82 team.
No?
Was he right? He must have been right back then.
Yeah, he would have been the right back. The left back would have been...
Oh, sorry. You said he wasn't a left back as if I'd said he had two heads. It's a fullback. Holy smokes.
No.
Yeah, so somebody like him or a Maldini.
You left back for Brazil in 82.
If that's what you're looking for. You know, people that are just above. But I would tell you that in the 70s and early 80s, there was tons of fullbacks that attackers, they wouldn't go near them. In fear of their life.
Stevie, a slightly easier question for you to wrap things up here on Extra Time. Do you have the Spot the Dog book on your bookshelf? And more importantly, is it on your right or your left?
Uh-oh. Well, trouble.
One, I don't know what my right and left is. And two, Spot the Dog.
Nope, still got the phone in hand. Good, just in case we were wondering where the phone was. It is still in Stevie's hand.
We were discussing book choices the other day, Stevie.
That is his better side, yeah.
We were discussing book choices, and Don and Dan thought, were sure that you had Spot the Dog on your bookshelf behind you.
Nah.
There aren't many books. They're all old DVDs.
Yes.
All the books are upstairs.
Very timely, your DVD collection.
There's some classics in there.
Update it.
Oh, we'll get him a Netflix password one of these days. All right, boys, great stuff.
No, don't.
One flew over the cuckoo's nest. That was a good one to clean you up.
Back when defenders used to defend, huh? Back when defenders used to defend. All right, Stevie, Shaq, Ale, thank you very much. Boys, will be back over the weekend. Plenty more to cover
The Shining.
On
yes,
ESPN
please.
FC.